Here, often when we talk about decision points in our lives or opportunities that come along, we've got these transitions in life. We talk about it in terms of doors. When we have, you know, a job opportunity, we say, hey, this door opened up for me at work. And then when you miss out on that opportunity, we say, well, that door got closed. But as good Christians, we say every time God closes a door, he opens a window, right? We've got these phrases. When somebody is dying, we say that they're at death's door. There's even a long list of movies which feature characters choosing to walk through a door into the unknown. The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. They get to the wardrobe, they see the opening, and they have to decide, am I going to go through this door into the adventure? The same thing happens in The Wizard of Oz. And in all of these situations, while we know that the door, walking through it, represents a turning point, a change, an opportunity, something's going to be different, we don't always know exactly what lays ahead. So if you're married or have been married and you said, I do to your spouse, at that point, you were choosing door number one, but you didn't know necessarily what was going to lie ahead. There were going to be some ups, there were probably some downs, and a whole lot of adventure. When Michelle and I were deciding if we wanted to take the plunge and build a house in southern Iowa, truly in the middle of nowhere, in the northwest corner of Lucas County, we were deciding, do we want to lose or leave everything we know about suburban life and go into this country living? And yeah, we had ideas of what it was going to look like, but we had no idea where God was going to take us. And lucky for you all, it brought us here, and it got me some sheep on my farm, which is going to be really, really helpful for these next 2 weeks of messages. You know, this whole agriculture thing helps me out when I'm preaching to you guys. It's why I got the sheep. I did it for you. So anyway, we talk a lot about doors, but we're in this series right now, and we're going to be talking about where Jesus says, I am the gate for the sheep, or in the King James, it says, I am the door. And we've seen Jesus uses all these different metaphors to try to teach the people about who he is. And in these metaphors, he used what the people of the day would have known. So he used a lot of Middle Eastern or Jewish historical statements that had a lot of significance to those people. What it does is it requires us to brush up a little bit on the cultural nuance of what's going on, because we're a little more confused when a guy says, I am the bread. We're like, okay, explain that to me. But he's using these situations, these stories, to try to teach us who he is. And in this metaphor, like I said today, he says, I am the gate for the sheep. What he's doing is he's making an exclusive claim about himself and the way of salvation. But it's also so much more than that. In what he says, he's also creating a possibility where there was none. In that song we just sang, All Sufficient Merit, you know, we can't get to God on our own. It's through the merit, through the work of what Jesus did on the cross. He made a way where there was no way. So, when we think about the doors that we've walked through in our lives, we need to understand that if you've never walked through the door of Jesus, then that's going to impact every other decision that you make through the rest of your life. So today we're going to be in John chapter 10, verses 1 through 10, as the screen says, if you want to open your Bibles there now. But before we get there, I want to set the scene with what happened in John chapter 9. So in John chapter 9, Jesus encounters a man who is born blind from birth, and he performs a miracle. He, unfortunately, it's the Sabbath, but on the Sabbath, he spits in some mud, puts it on the man's eyes, tells him to go wash off, and the man can see. His blindness that he's had his entire life goes away, and his sight is restored. And the religious leaders, though, who already weren't very fond of Jesus and his teaching, were upset over this miracle, because here Jesus worked on the Sabbath. And that was a huge no-no. So they decide that they're going to investigate this miracle, because what they're trying to prove is that Jesus is not from God like he continues to tell people he is. Rather than seeing how Jesus opened up the work of God in this man's life by opening up his eyes, they instead become a wall. They're trying to block the man from seeing God's care for him through Jesus' actions. And this is something that the Pharisees, the religious leaders, were known for in Jesus' day. They took the law of Moses, which was already very difficult to follow, and they made it an even higher barrier for people to try to cross over. You know, if the law of Moses said you have to do this much, they would say, you better do this much to make sure that you attain it. And in doing so, they set a wall so high that nobody felt like they were able to connect with God. It discouraged people, in fact, from feeling like they could be known by God. So the Pharisees, in their investigation, they call the man's parents to question them, but the parents, being afraid of the religious leaders, said, hey, don't talk to us, our son's of age. Ask him what he thinks. So they call the man back in, and he tells them the truth of what happened and defends Jesus. And he ends by saying, one thing I do know, I was blind, but now I see. I love that statement. It's so powerful. What he's saying here is that he's got this incredible testimony to share. He doesn't need to know everything about Jesus. He doesn't know, you know, all of the Jesus' teachings or any of that. What he knows is that his eyes have been opened and his life has been transformed. And that is an incredible, incredibly powerful testimony. When you hear a story of somebody, you know, some celebrity who has completely gone one way, Jelly Roll. Any of you know Jelly Roll? Big country singer, tattoos all over his face. He regrets many of those things. But he's come to know Jesus, and his life has been transformed. When I don't think his theology is probably very good. I've listened to him speak. He doesn't know everything that's in the Bible, but he's a life that's transformed. He can say, one thing I do know, I was blind, but now I see. And there are hundreds of thousands of people who see that in his life and go, huh, wonder what happened. And it makes them curious. My hope and prayer for our church is that we are filled with people a year from now who can say, one thing I do know, I was blind, but now I see. That's what we want to see Jesus doing in people's lives. Anyway. This, when he says that, it makes the religious leaders absolutely irate. And so they start insulting the man. And the man then says, if this man, speaking of Jesus, were not from God, he could do nothing. When he said this, it was over for them. They told the man that he was steeped in sin from birth. And how dare you lecture us? And they actually threw him out. So Jesus finds out about this, and he ends up in a conversation with the Pharisees, and that's where we find ourselves now in chapter 10. Jesus is talking to the religious leaders, and listen to what he says. So he's just done this miracle. The religious leaders have become a wall. They're trying to block this man from recognizing that God's done this incredible work in his life. And Jesus says this, very truly I tell you, Pharisees, verse 1, anyone who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in by some other way, is a thief and a robber. The one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he's brought out all his own, he goes on ahead of them, and his sheep follow him because they know his voice. But they will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run away from him because they do not recognize a stranger's voice. Jesus used this figure of speech, but the Pharisees did not understand what he was telling them. Okay, so let me explain a little bit of what shepherding in the Middle East during Jesus' day would have been like. Jesus is referring here to a sheep pen with a gate, and the gate has a gatekeeper who's letting the shepherds in and out to get their sheep, and the sheep hear their shepherd's voice in the morning, and they come follow the shepherd on out. And so what Jesus is describing here is a communal sheep pen. In the city, the average person didn't have enough land that they could just bring the sheep to their backyard. So there is a space with very tall walls that no coyote, no wolf was going to easily jump over. And all the shepherds in the town would bring their sheep there in the evening. And they had one person who would be the gatekeeper for the gate where all the sheep were in town. And that's the situation that Jesus is describing here. And the gatekeeper was tasked with knowing the shepherds and allowing the shepherds from the community to come and have access to their sheep to get them out each morning. But the question this raises is, how could they know which sheep were theirs when they were all brought together? Don't all sheep look the same? How dare you think that way? I know many of you have lived on farms. And so you've had animals, and people who haven't lived on farms, me included several years ago, would be like, they all look the same. But when you know your animals, you can see them from a long ways off. Just see the way they walk, the way they carry their head, the size of their head, the little spot here and the little mark there, and you can identify your own animals. And some people don't name their animals, at least not most of them. But there's always a few special ones who get a name. So if an animal has a name, like Jesus describes here, he calls them out by name, it means that they are loved in a way that J137 is not loved, right? If they are a number, the love is not there. But so I've got some sheep, and they all look the same to you all, probably. From 100 yards away, I can tell each one of them apart. On the far left is the only one with a dark nose, so I named him Smudge. It's easy to remember. The one on the far right has these little markings in the middle of the ears, little spots almost, so I call that one Freckles. Her coat is slightly different. In the middle is red because his ear tips are red. Dot has one single dot on an ear. These are all the most nuanced markings that unless you spend a lot of time with these sheep, they all look the same. I can tell based on the size of the body which one's in front. Freckles is always in front. Smudge is always in back. Always. So for all the way across my hillside, I can tell which is which. The average person can't, but I'm their shepherd, right? I've had these 5 sheep for a little over a year now, and they're what's going to start growing my flock. So I gave them names because I'm not going to eat these. I'll probably eat their children, but I'm not going to eat them, right? But we understand, this is the thing. Being in an agricultural community, you guys understand these things. If I was in suburban Des Moines preaching this, they'd all be jaws dropped. Like, how are you talking about this? We understand these things. So, obviously, the point is, the shepherds could recognize their own sheep in the communal sheep pen. But the sheep also know the sound of their shepherd's voice so well that when their shepherd would come and they'd sing a song or maybe play a little flute, their sheep would pop up and come to the gate and be ready to go. I came across a story back in the late 80s. There was a Palestinian uprising, and the Israeli army decided to punish an entire village near Bethlehem for not paying its taxes. So they took everybody's livestock and all their sheep and put them in a pen. And an old widow, who that was all she had to live on, went to the gatekeeper and said, "Look, this is all I have. I need my sheep. I've got 25 sheep." And the gatekeeper said, "Ma'am, there are hundreds of sheep. How on earth are you going to get your sheep?" And her son was with her, and he started playing a little flute. And all of a sudden, some sheep's heads popped up, and they just started coming over to the gate. 1, 2, 3, 4, 25 sheep walked right out and followed him away. Like, this has been going on for millennia. That's how these animals work. And so when Jesus uses these illustrations, what he's saying is, the shepherd knows the sheep, and his sheep know him. It's a two-way street here. Jesus knows you. If you're a follower of Jesus, he knows you intimately. He knows your nuances. He knows your temptations. He knows your struggles. He knows your strengths. And if you're a follower of Jesus, you should know his voice. You should know when he's calling you to be the men's Bible study teacher. Or if he's challenging you on a sin or something that you need to clean up in your life. And you should also know if there's like this, hey, you're a mess up, you're a screw up, you don't deserve this. You should be able to hear that and go, that's not the voice of my shepherd. That's the voice of somebody else who's trying to bring condemnation into my life. We need to be able to recognize the voice of our shepherd. So this obviously has huge impacts for us. We're going to talk about that next week. Next week is I Am the Good Shepherd. So it's like part two of this series. So anyway, after these first few verses, Jesus changes his reference point a little bit, where he calls himself now the door or the gate. So let's keep reading in John chapter 10, picking up in verse 7. It says, therefore, Jesus said again, very truly, I tell you, I am the gate, or if you have a King James or some other translations, I am the door for the sheep. All who have come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep have not listened to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. They will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. So now we have a little different scenario. No longer are the sheep in the communal pen. Jesus is describing a different situation where there is no gatekeeper. Instead, he says he is the gate who protects the sheep. He opens the pen to let them go out for food and water, and he protects them at night and gives them safety. For most of my life, I thought that Jesus was saying he was an actual gate. You know the type. They sell them at Baumgars or Lockridge. They look just like this. Every farm's got them all over. And I thought, okay, he's a giant barrier on a set of hinges. And that's this imagery that he's using. And it's not too far-fetched to come to that belief because like we saw the last 2 weeks, he called himself bread. He called himself light. And so to say that he's a gate, you're like, okay, I could get there. That's not a hard jump. But here's the thing. In the very next verse after where I stopped, he says, I am the good shepherd. And so we have two I am statements within just a couple sentences of each other. And we can look at that and we can say, okay, Jesus is going from one analogy to a totally different analogy. Or we can say, what if these two things play together? So in the Near Eastern culture, what would happen when we learn about this, the shepherds, sometimes they brought them to the communal pen, but other times in the summer, they'd take their sheep out into the wilderness for weeks at a time, or they'd go out into the plains. And when they were out there, they weren't coming home every single day because that would limit how far they could go out to get food. And so they'd go out further, but then they're out for weeks at a time, like the shepherds, when Jesus was born, they were out at night keeping watch of their flocks. The easiest way to keep watch of your flock is to get them into a pen, some sort of a corral. So maybe they would take them to the edge of a cliff so that nothing could come from behind. Maybe they would find a cave, little area to put the sheep inside. Sometimes they would build their own walls with stones or briars or huge shrubs, and then they'd put thorny plants on top to prevent coyotes from trying to jump in or the sheep trying to get out or somebody trying to come and steal their sheep. And in these openings or in these pens, they would leave one small opening. And that's where the shepherd would sleep. And so when you think of it in that term, Jesus is both the good shepherd and he's operating as the gate as he lays in the only opening where the sheep can come and go. And so the only way that somebody could attack the sheep is if they crossed over the shepherd's body. The only way the sheep could get out and find harm is if they passed over the shepherd's body. And so this is a really helpful way when we see it this like this is to see that Jesus is saying, I am the gate and I am the shepherd both at the same time. And as the gate, he is a living shepherd who's guarding and protecting the sheep. So when Jesus describes himself as a gate, he isn't saying that he is a wooden barrier on a hinge swinging open and shut. What he's doing is he's describing the functions that the shepherd has for caring for and protecting his flock. And in doing this, Jesus actually paints a really full and complete picture for us. So what are these functions that the shepherd performs when he operates as a gate in this opening out in the wilderness? First, Jesus says is salvation. In verse 9, it begins, whoever enters through me will be saved. Jesus is making sure his spiritual teaching is crystal clear. He is the gate who leads to eternal salvation. The sheep want to come into his sheepfold. That's where we find eternal security. He is the shepherd sitting at the opening, the entranceway that leads to life. But you have to pass through Jesus to get to God. And often when people read a verse like this, they don't like that Jesus is making an exclusive claim here. They want there to be other ways to God. All religions lead to the same destination is a very popular belief in our world. But Jesus is clear. Trying to get to God through any other means, by climbing over the wall, for instance, is not what the sheep who are part of Jesus' flock do. They don't jump over the wall to get in. They come through the opening, through the gate, through Jesus. Now, the King James Version, like I said, calls it a door. And with that word, a lot of people get the wrong impression. They don't see Jesus as a gate that's saying, come on in. But they see it as a door, a barrier to stop people, to say, you're not good enough. You can't come in. You haven't done enough. You haven't given enough. You haven't served enough. They see Jesus as being a barrier. And that's the role that the Pharisees were playing. We have to understand that in Jesus' life, when he says he is the only way and he is the gate, what he's actually done is he made a way where there was no way. Like in Romans, we were told, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. All of us were in the boat of sinners and separated from God. There was no door to get from our lives to God. That door had been completely blocked. Jesus busted a hole in that wall. The veil was torn in two when he died on the cross and his blood was shed for our forgiveness and his righteousness was put on us. So when God sees us, he sees us as his perfect, spotless lambs. Jesus made a way where there was no way. So when we hear about him being a door or a gate, it's not a barrier or a block, but for the first time, there's a way where God says, come on home. But the only way in is not to jump this wall, but to come through the blood of Jesus Christ. Next, we see the function of Jesus as the gate is for provision. The second half of verse 9 says, they will come in and go out and find pasture. My absolute favorite thing to do with my sheep. I have, it's electric fence around 6 acres, and then I have paddocks that are maybe 100 feet by 100 feet, and they get that for 3 to 4 days. Okay, so twice a week, I move my sheep from one paddock to the next. And the best thing in the entire world is when I take off those two wires of electric strand that the sheep will not go past, and I walk it open, and the sheep bounce. They literally bound through, and then you just hear the sound of the grasses and the clovers and the leafy greens getting ripped out of the grass. If you've farmed, you know the sound of a happy animal pulling on the food and just munching and ripping, and it's just like they've got green pasture. And that's what Jesus is saying. As he operates as the gate every morning, he opens up and he says, here, I've taken you to fresh green pasture. I've given you a life that is worth living. It's better than what you're going to do on your own. On their own, my sheep stay in the same stupid spot where they pooped all night long. And they don't move. And that's why I have to move them every 3 or 4 days. And they're like, this is great. There's no poop here. And there's all the green that I want. Jesus is doing that for us as well. He's opening up and he's saying, come on through. I'm providing everything you need on the other side of this. Okay? But we have to walk through it. We have to trust that Jesus is a gate that can be trusted, that we're going to come into his sheepfold. And we're going to trust that he's taking us to green pasture. The third function that we see in this passage is in verse 10. It says, the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. Satan wants to ruin your life. This world wants to ruin your life. But we have a shepherd who operates as a gate to protect us. After going out to the pastures all day, when we come in, we don't have to worry about being eaten by a wolf or a coyote because the shepherd is at the door. And when Jesus is the gate between us and the thieves and the robbers and the wild animals who are out to destroy us, we can come in and we can go out, and at night we can find rest and experience shalom and contentment. This doesn't mean that life is never going to be hard, but it does mean that you will never be lost. You will never be stolen. Paul says it really clearly in Romans chapter 8, verse 38 and 39. He writes, for I am convinced that neither death nor life, neither angels nor demons, neither the present nor the future, nor any powers, neither height nor depth, nor anything else in all of creation will be able to separate us from the love of God. Nothing can separate us from God. There is no robber who can hop into the sheep pen and steal you away, because Jesus will protect us until the very end. He is the gate that gives us that security. So look, our sin in this life, going all the way back to Adam and on each one of us, made a wall between us and God. And then the Pharisees of Jesus' day and some modern Pharisees in our day and age, they like to continue to build upon that wall and to make it hard for us to get to God. But Jesus came and he offered us a new door, a new opportunity. And the question is, as you face door Jesus in front of you, are you willing to walk through that door into that new adventure? I know many of you have taken that step. You're on that journey. You went through the door and you're experiencing life and life to the full on the other side. But I also know that there are many of you who maybe haven't made that decision yet. You've heard about it. You've read about it. You've come to church for a while, but you're still living this life for yourself. And you're not experiencing what it means to follow the shepherd, to know his voice. And that door sits available for you today. So if you hear the call of Jesus' voice and respond, I encourage you, follow the good shepherd and receive his salvation, his provision, and his protection. Then you'll have the opportunity to be like one of my sheep, fat and happy. Those who follow Jesus through his gate flourish because of the skill and the care of this incredible shepherd. Jesus is the entrance to a spiritual life that we never thought possible and we could never achieve on our own. He's the beginning of an adventure that leads to abundant life. Would you bow your heads with me as we pray?